I'd like to welcome you to this evening's forum. Tonight's topic is transition. My life has a superb cast, but I can't figure out the plot. I'm Darius Larson, the campus pastor at St. Cloud State University, and we have three and maybe four people speaking tonight on this topic, but she's in transition. No. Bill Davis, Karen Stickland, and Ray Geist. But before I ask them just to lay out briefly from kind of their own life experiences, their own transitions, I want to just say, I think, two things. Transition has been defined as passage from one state to another, euphemism being a time of change. It's an in-between time of search and faith. And I've kind of been thinking about it today as kind of this place where you're kind of in a time warp. You know, you remember a lot of past things, and you're looking, you think to some sort of future thing, but you really don't know what that future is, and you're kind of just wanting to get out of where you are, but you don't know where that out of is leading you. And that's a process, I think, is what transition is all about. And I guess that's all I will say at this moment. And Ray, do you want to share some of your thoughts?
I'm probably part of this proof that there is life after transition. I was a parish pastor for 10 years in the late 60s, when the lid was lifted off of so much of the world. I couldn't understand what was happening in our United States, much less the church's lack of response to it. I also was not at all certain that I should have ever been a pastor. I'm not very good at balancing a coffee cup on my knee. I flunked ladies' aid. At that point, I resigned from parish ministry and went to graduate school at the University of Minnesota. Naive, I had been a kept person. I'd lived in a parsonage, didn't know the realities of the world. One example of that, went to buy a home to put my wife and four children and myself in. When they came to check out the loan and see what kind of backing, they first asked me where I was employed. I wasn't employed. Your wife, where is she employed? She's not employed. How do you borrow money to have a home? Well, that's another whole story. I had a lot to learn. Spent 7 years at the University of Minnesota looking at work. Fascinated by work. I could look at it all day long. Because I didn't understand my own work, I also was seeing and hearing in my study as a pastor that most of the crises out of which people came to seek assistance were work-related. Overemployed, underemployed, misemployed. About the same time, HEW under Elliot Richardson put out Work in America and traced by their research so many of the ills in America to work. So that's why I focused on that in my own thoughts and studies at the university. It was helpful to get to the bottom line. It was helpful for me to redefine work as the activity by which we celebrate and create our humanity. Job, Old English, jaba, meant little piece of. Once I knew what my work was, then when I went out on a job interview, I could sort of try that job on to see whether it fit with my work. Much to my surprise, one of the jobs that called me again was to be in a small parish. even an LCMS parish, which I had left 10 years previous because I was tired of fighting 19th century battles. I returned. That was 10 years ago. Now I'm here on sabbatical. That congregation wants to retain my ministry and encouraged me when I wanted to follow up on our district convention's recommendation that pastors, church professionals, after they had been in place for 5 years, be given a 3-month sabbatical. Because our people had been here, 25 of them, here at Holden 2 years ago, when I said I'd like to come to Holden for 2 months, they said, great, sounds good. I've got more to talk about, but I've used my time.
Karen.
Some of the things I have to say are kind of a takeoff on what you said. I think one of the reasons that there's so much stress when we're in transition is maybe because we feel a sort of a pressure to do something or to be something or to achieve something that maybe we may or may not want to do. I think of a college student just graduating, and now the college student must get a job. Of course, because a college student has spent a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort to get a degree. And I felt the same way getting out of college. And I remember also the last time I left Holden was 2 years ago. I left here and I didn't want to get a job. Because I wanted to do work, I wanted to be involved with social justice issues, but I didn't want to get a job. That was a long time in coming for me. And I think it came out of a recognition that I don't have to be a certain profession. And I don't have to be a teacher or be a lawyer or any of those things. Because I think that we all have intrinsic value as human beings, just as we are, regardless of what our profession is or isn't. And part of that came from me when I worked with disabled people I lived in for a couple years. And seeing those people that some of whom couldn't even read or write, maybe they could write their names. And knowing that they were valued by God just as much as I am, and though I have certainly different talents, they're human beings just as they are. So I think that our culture emphasizes a lot of profession or a job, and that's what puts a lot of pressure on us in transition. What else am I going to say? So I think it's part of the reason transitions are stressful is because in a way some of us are trying to force ourselves into a mold, and that's painful for us. And one of the things I'd like to be is to be a Christian, and I think that should be enough. Certainly I have to earn my living one way or the other, but I think that's enough for me to have as a profession. That's what I want to be.
But Darius asked me to talk tonight because when he did, I started writing down some notes, and I came up with a little thing that has three sections, and each section has three subpoints. I've never done that before in my life. It came out funny. And it's also nice. I'm glad Ray talked first because it's kind of nice to hear a pastor who had somewhat similar experience than mine. Similar experience to mine, but also somewhat different. My first section is disclaimers. My first point under that is I'm not a professional on the subject of transition. And the second point is that while being in transition is probably inevitable in life, if you're going to have children, marriage, and all that stuff, I'm not necessarily an advocate of it. And I'm not necessarily an advocate, especially of intentionally choosing transition, especially regarding careers, which is what I will share with you tonight. And I know that many people here at Holden have weathered more experiences in transition than I hope I have to. But Darius asked me to say a few words from a personal experience with a particular transitional experience. Specifically, I made a clear change in vocation. Ray did. And that is, I was a parish pastor, and then I went to medical school, and then I'm currently training in psychiatry. So much of my thoughts, I think, are probably more applicable to pastors, but hopefully, you know, all of you can relate somehow. Second section, some thoughts on what one may expect to experience while in a transitional stage, especially in a vocational experience. I think to be in transition means that one will experience loneliness as well as aloneness more acutely. We have chosen not to do whatever we are doing the traditional or the conventional way. I guess I would have rated my experience in the pastoral ministry a high average. I was lucky. I worked with good people. The congregation I went to had good pastoral leadership. But even for the pastors who are in a more stressful situation with all the incumbent problems of parish ministry, you have a role, you have been called, you have a job, and one decides to leave that, say to go back to school, you are once again a nothing, for a while at least, and that's the way many students are thought of, especially medical students. Traditional supports are no longer there, or no longer easily accessible. I was 10 years older than the majority of fellow students, and I felt misunderstood by other pastors. And frankly, I felt disregarded by the church. And I spent a lot of time asking why. And I figured out it's probably because we have no concept of a called vocation within our church. I've known pastors who felt their most effective ministry was through art, through writing, through psychotherapy, and many other means, outside the traditional parish setting, who long to pursue their talents as a ministry, but both subtly and overtly pressure is placed to perform the traditional role or no role at all. And it's a challenge, and I think it's a further burden to those of us in transition. And I think it's partly responsible for the misunderstanding and the loneliness of those of us who step outside the traditional mold and yet desire to continue to be seen as functioning in ministry. A well-intentioned but often asked question is, for me, was, why did you leave the ministry? And my whys of going into medicine are too numerous to list and are not applicable here. But the question indicates that you either are a minister, a parish pastor, or you're not. And I did not want to leave the ministry, and I did not see my decision in that light. But through various actions and inactions of our church leaders, I soon felt that way. And I became very much aware that I was at best on the fringes and very much had taken a position I felt that was not appreciated. So it is lonely, and I encourage anyone contemplating making a career transition to take that very seriously, if it's worth it. That's my longest point. I had to say it. Before I had completed my transition, or it's not really completed yet, but the worst part's done, I found out how earnestly a large part of me yearned for the status quo, chastising myself for having been behind in my decisions or too unconventional or dragging my family through times of unknowing and stress. I often thought of my college roommate named Steve, who had decided in high school that he would be a lawyer in Milwaukee after 3 years of practicing law in the Air Force, and that they would have two children, a boy and a girl, he announced. And by God, he did it, except that, just like he said, except they got two boys, and he handled it just fine. The life seemed terribly easy for him, much less stressful for him, and many times the Sunday night before a Monday morning exam, I found myself wondering if it was worth it at all. In my transitional experience, I came in touch with that traditional, that conservative side of myself, which I had long denied. It was there, I imagine, to always make me answer that question of why. So I guess I would encourage folks who are considering life changes and career to question if they are really enthused about a very different life than that pictured by conventional American society. My final thought about transitional experience is that one must expect a certain loss of community, which harks back to my first point about loneliness. In my district, where I was a pastor, pastors were in very close community, very supportive. In med school, I found that community lacking. I invited myself to some pastoral meetings, but I was not invited back. Med students are fun and they have great parties, but there aren't very many that are married, and especially with kids. So we had to start out building our community one by one all over again. And that's difficult to do when you are short of time and energy. And I think that the older we get and the more responsibilities we have, especially with family, children, and so on, the more we need that supportive community. And that community was lost to us at a very crucial time in our life. So that may be lost if you switch locations, jobs. On the other hand, you may find that it will be a joyful community that you will go into in your transition. Finally, some thoughts on now that it's almost done. I remember saying to a very close friend of mine in fourth year of school, I don't think I'd ever do that again. And he said, you don't have to. You've done it. And I think a hefty measure of naivete, innocence, idealism is important in going into transition. The old saying, if I'd only known then what I know now, would have kept a lot of people from fulfilling their dreams. And I'm all for a good dose of wild abandon. Transition experiences are a challenge, just as anything else, child raising and marriage and all that stuff. And it's all right to go into it with hopes and dreams. But I think one thing that I found is don't expect the dream to come out as it was originally dreamed, because there are all those limitations. And the dream that I had going into medical school is significantly different than how it's turning out. But rather than letting the limitations destroy it and stop us, work around them. A final point about pastors, because I feel so strongly about it. I feel that they have such a significant place in our lives and are hurting so much. I've learned so much about pastors since I've left the ministry. There, I said it. But many of them have confided in me, and many pastors say one of the things that really is a double-edged sword, they say they really admire me and wish they could do what I am doing. And that's really a double-edged sword, because I found myself getting very angry with that. And my anger came from the assumption that I felt that this was something easy for me to do, and it's not. I don't think we should ever look at transitional experiences as easy or necessarily fun. If they are, that's great. But my anger was also directed towards them because I have a low tolerance for seeing people, and especially pastors, in situations they do not like and that they do not enjoy, and yet are unwilling or unable to take some responsibility to change that. That anger has been tempered greatly. And now I spend a lot of time encouraging them to see the good that they have there rather than going into transition. But making the changes within their setting. My final and last point, subset 3, is not to spend too much time counting the cost. A career switch, especially like what Ray said, one which means going back to school, will cost you. It will cost you money. Again, reality dictates that we take that into serious consideration, but I guess I really believe that if you look at what you want and need first for yourself and for your family, what you can contribute, the cost factor will take a proper perspective.
You want to say something?
Well, I told Darius I do want to talk about my divorce. I haven't been divorced, but I don't want to. I hope that that we can also talk about the transitions of divorce, of being single, of all those kinds of issues in the personal realm, not just vocational transitions, because I think for many of us here in Holden, those are kind of the most difficult transitions. The whole idea, at least for me, I always think of being single as being a transition, and then start to wonder after, over 31 years of that, if it really is a transition or what it is. And, all the transition, there are many people up here who are going through divorces right now. Those are devastating transitions, very difficult times, the transitions of wondering about all those kinds of personal issues, gay, straight kinds of issues, too. Those are really also important transitions. So I just wanted to bring in that level as well, not just careers and vocations.
And one other level, just a little different sidelight, is not only moving from a job to another job or a career to another career, but finding what is my career, maybe from a student to your first job, or back to you, get rid of the career thing, I'm a Christian, and what does that mean? in relationship to my job choice. This topic of transition is just huge. And there's so many very personal feelings about your own transitions. And I want us to be sensitive to each other as we start talking about these, but also challenge you to start sharing things that you have learned in your own transitions that may be beneficial for others, or some questions that you are currently asking yourself that somebody else may be able to say how they work through something similar, not to say this is how you're supposed to do it, but this may be helpful for you, or anything else you want to talk about. So, yes?
In the forum about prayer the other day, one of the last comments was about the mystery, and that it's not like an Agatha Christie, that there's a certain right answer. And your goal is just to find that place that God has in mind for you, and if you miss it, you made a good point that day that that's not the kind of mystery we're talking about in life, that it's the mystery of the unfolding each day. You know, what does this decision do for me? What kind of other decisions? What are my options? That the way life unfolds rather than fitting into a model that somebody else designed for you.
The point here about status quo, I think all of you kind of talked about that in one way or the other. The struggle against the grain is when one finds oneself in transition so often. How do you cope with that? Yes?
I'm in transition right now, and I find that when I wasn't in transition, there were a lot of comforts and things that that created a false reality. And it's been really painful for me over the last half a year to be in transition, but if I can say one thing that's positive, I can say that the roles and the images I've had of myself have been stripped away, and I've constantly been slammed up against myself everywhere I turn. And having to be with that, knowing that I'm going to be up against only me for a period of time, it has really challenged and shaped me in a certain way. It's not finished yet. I feel that it's a problem. But it's a honing that is real painful, and yet there's something so good about it.
Can any of the rest of you kind of identify with that in the different transitions you've been in?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, I feel the same way. When I feel I go through plateaus and change and plateaus, and I look forward to the transition because it feels good. It causes me problems, though, when I'm in a transition and I'm not aware of the transition. Once I say, oh, things are changing, then I can adapt myself and control the stress. But if I'm suddenly moving around and things are a lot different than they were, my perceptions of things are different. Because that's really what it is. Nothing's changed. It's my perceptions are changing. Then I have a hard time dealing with it. Once I say, yeah, I'm changing, then I can deal with it, and it starts becoming fun. I enjoy it.
So, I too am in transition, and I think some of the hardest things for me were that I went back to graduate school, and I thought, well, I'll go to graduate school for 2 years, and then I'll kind of pick up where I was before, and that's not possible. And the whole change in lifestyle, I have no sense of belonging in the place. Like, I'm just drifting. Because moving 8 times in a year doesn't help. But you know, it's very much a change in lifestyle and living arrangements and financial situation. That part changes almost more than anything else. But not knowing where I'm going, the drifting, there's no belonging.
Constant upheaval.
I may be in transition. I got a letter of call in the mail today from another congregation. And one of the struggles that I have in that is balancing off satisfaction or enjoyment with service. And is it selfish want to be happy in a place, Or should one hear a call to service that isn't necessarily just a meeting of one's own personal needs or satisfaction? How does service and satisfaction balance each other out? How does a person tell a congregation, I don't really want to go there? And they say, why not? Say, well, I don't feel like it. If they meant something about God, then what would I say?
Yeah. Up here in the doctor.
I just didn't really identify with the feeling of someone who's not of a home. I'm a student, and I've spent 2 years in college. And at the beginning of this past year, my sophomore year, it hit me at some point that I really did not have any place that I felt like was really my home, because my parents have a home, but that's not really my home. And school is where I belong, but it isn't my home. And that's a very uncomfortable feeling, especially someone like myself. My home, my family are very important to me, very central to who I am, very much a part of my identity. And all of a sudden realize that one is not the home, but it's a very transitional thing.
Problem with community and where it is in the upheaval that you're moving 8 times and being a student and trying to live the Christian life and, you know, where the church was as a former pastor, you know, there I said a former pastor, but maybe a former minister. But, you know, what is the role of the church, you know, and how should the church be the body of Christ, as we've been learning from the pictures too? It's something to say.
I read a very interesting book by Gail Cheely, who stole passages from a lot of you men are reading the second book.
Season in a Man's Life.
Yeah. She wrote a new one called Pathfinders that I recommend anyone read, especially women, because it talks about these hard times in your life and what you do with them, how you turn them around to build on them. And she has, she's talked to people like Rosalind Carter and other people that you can identify with their understanding. She did a lot of surveying of women to get to this place. It's now in paperback, so it's reasonably quiet, but I recommend for people to read it. It's called Pathfinders. I see some other people have read it. It's one of the most beautiful book I've read in the last 2 or 3 years.
It's in the bookstore on the library.
I have a question for about how one deals with the perception that one isn't getting anything. I mean, I think, when I think about the answer, what are you doing when I'm in transition, it's kind of a cover. And for me, it's a cover because I think real honest, what are you doing? What have you done? What have you been doing for you? I'm probably better than two. I'm one less than two. And that's really how I feel quite often. I'm not at school, sort of working people out. I don't have one. But at the same time, I am going. I can look back at the 7 months and say that a lot has happened, I'm stronger, and I know my life is better. But the appearance that I'm not going anywhere, but constantly is holding down when I'm going to go. And the question is, how does it deal with that perception? Not moving.
I feel the same thing. I'm feeling it right now, for as you are me that. I lost this fear, the anxiety, the whole thing, and talking, creeping up on me again. Feeling that very thing, that I'm not journaling, I'm not dreaming, I'm not praying. I'm reading my Bible, so I'm Elijah. and God were having a conversation, Elisha, saying, what am I doing here? Go to crawl in a cave. I remember, I saw a cave up the hillside. But I'm wondering kind of some of that and what you had said earlier about what does a church do, and then what you were saying about being homeless. I was remembering last night in the text, and foxes have holes and birds have nests with them. You know, go follow me, you don't have a home. It suddenly hit me that Christ's message seems to be written for people in transition. Because that whole New Testament gospel is a moving, transition, changing type of thing. And I'm wondering if the church as we know it, the structured church with our ritual and our Sunday morning and our Sunday school and all this kind of stuff, has got one level of experience in the gospel, which is that traditional and the normal, and everything's okay. And the rest of us are in that other side of experiencing the gospel on that growing edge where it really hurts. And where it talks about healing, we know what hurts, how we get to that healing place. And those kinds of tensions just occurred to me.
Basic, raw questions there. Anybody wants them to ask some other questions or have some possible suggestions?
I'm just wondering about dealing with people that you're close to that are in transition. If you're at a stable point and people around you, significant people in your life are moving, and how does that feel with transition happening around you?
I feel guilty about it. You know, how come I'm not doing those things? Or how come I'm supposed to be so comfortable? And sometimes I'm not comfortable, and then they feel guilty that they're comfortable. That's a heck of a lot more than that as well. Somebody was reading Zen and the Other Motorcycle Maintenance today. I saw the book. And after seeing it, I thought of a good line in there. Of people climbing a mountain. And the problem is that people always think that the purpose of climbing the mountain is to get to the top. And when you get to the top, well, there's only one place to go down, but that's another story. But you spend so much time getting to the top that you miss the climb. You miss the walk. And what Zen is, according to whatever his name was. Yeah.
Robert.
Okay. Is to experience you, wherever you are is where you're supposed to be. Now that's easy for people who feel kind of good about where they are. And it's not too easy for people who say, what an ugly mountain this is. You know, why am I on this mountain anyway? You know? And how do you help people see that where they are is maybe, you know, where do you see some sense and meaning in that spot where they currently are? Yeah, Beth.
My husband's in the military, and I was for a while. So, you know, the idea of life is involved with ugly comes to mind. Because I've lived in just 8 to 10 years. And you get used to the idea, and you don't know where you're going to live or where you're going to go. You just kind of like, oh, look, we're going to... Why not North Dakota in 4 weeks? Oh, that's an awesome. You keep pretending, kind of, you know, with the reality that you know something's going to happen, you keep pretending that you're going to go there. You make all of your plans. You plant your garden, you put the fruit trees in, you take care of the yard, this is your yard, forever and ever. You register your kids' programs, you go to, you know, go to classes, you register for college in September, even though you broke a chance that you might be in another state, and you keep, you know, make whatever you have satisfactory. And then when something else comes, you go, oh, look, a new experience. And then you plant the garden, we were just the kids in a new program. But at least then you have some stability in what you are now, rather than saying, I only have 10 more years to go or 5 more years to go. Keep waiting for something to happen to you. This. All of a sudden, at the end of it, someone's going to create this perfect little life that you've always imagined, and it's going to drop for you.
Good point. I moved to New York knowing I would only be there for 2 years. And knowing that I intentionally or unintentionally missed out on a lot. Not getting involved in things that I shouldn't have, not getting involved in people that I should have.
And the other side, you're going to be there all the time, so you'll you know, you live in the state of Washington, and as long as you're close, you get to hold them someday. And you're going to live there all the time. Pretty soon you find yourself living someplace else. When you think you're going to live someplace and not be in transition for a long time, you miss out also.
I'm really touched by your statement because Rich and I are in transition with a lot of people who've been pastors, and I also have a profession that I am waiting for people to call. And I find myself in that state a lot. And what I do two things. I have you ever seen like a gerbil running around in one of those little circles? I do a lot of this, and then when I get really frustrated and I stop, I also found that when I'm not doing this, I'm learning to just sit still. And it's again, I mean, I'm not finished with this process, so I don't know where it's going, but there seems to be some real value right now in my life in sitting still and just feeling just non-movement, what that feels like, or what I am connected to when I don't see any connection to any other place. But I really feel for your question.
One of the struggles the church has is that when people are in transition, very often they leave.
Yep.
And my husband went through a job change about a year ago, and we didn't tell our friends because we didn't want them to have to deal with it. We're in a sense saving them from stress, but we couldn't deal with what we had to deal with and deal with what they were going to have to deal with as well. We remain within the church, but we see things that pull back. And we could understand that. It didn't happen for us, and it turns out at coffee before church, he's just saying, oh yes, yesterday I did another round of resumes, and within 10 minutes had a job offer. Just before choir practice. But, so then maybe we should have talked a little earlier, but I really feel the sense of, he also was unemployed after the service. He came home, he went to school, and it was during the Boeing crash. Anybody in the Puget Sound area knows about them. And I really feel the compassion because we felt it. Where are you going? He was even in school, and there still was a sense, you've got a child. What are you doing? And people treat you that way. I don't think they mean to be cruel, but it is something that is pervading in the society that if you aren't doing a job, you have no identity. And it's a very powerful feeling for those of us who've been through it, and a really difficult thing to deal with. For me, it was very, very hard, even though I, in a sense, was doing nothing as well. I had taught school. Why wasn't I teaching school? You know, there was that whole thing, should I be home or should I go out and support the family? There's no job. There's a whole struggle there, but society is saying to you, you don't have any personality unless you've got a job. And they say it very loudly and very clearly. And I don't have any answers, but I can sure feel compassion for where you are.
What's your name? What do you do?
Right.
You know, there you get value. What do you do? I do this. Oh, really? I don't do anything. Oh,
really? I find that true in you. The first question, where do you go to school? Oh, what's your major? Oh, what are you going to do? It's like, I'm not majoring in something to do something. I'm majoring in something because I like what it has to offer me to learn. And I'm getting an education because I like learning and I want to learn something. It's like consumer. My difficulty is to say, it's really, is on a different part of the transition, but I think it's very important. When I first started getting into counseling help and talking to anybody I could find and listen to me about the problems I was having, I kept hearing, let go. You know, let go of your family. You've got to let go of somebody's childhood. You've got to let go of this. Let go, let go. And so I did, but I found I didn't have anything else to hold on to. And that sometimes, I found myself letting go of so much that was really more of a problem. Instead of letting go, I really needed something to hold on to. And my first thing I found was
the Lutheran Church to be a very stable force in my life, and that was very welcome. But then I, the next year, that, well, it's time to let go of a lot, and I think I let go of too much. And I think that when things are ready to go, we can let them go. We don't need to make a big effort, and we can let them go at a time.
Somehow, transition forces us to ask fundamental questions about who or what we're all about, or what life is all about. And that is good. The problem is when there's, you wonder what the answers may be. You know, what can you cling to? What can you, you know, where are you? Those sorts of things. Yeah.
I was reflecting on the number of changes that I've had in which people in my church have been so shocked by them that they don't know how to deal with them. When, I mean, when I went to New Guinea, they didn't know how to take that. People in my school thought I was going down to make a fortune, and then when they found out I was going to be a short-term volunteer, why, then that was really critical, and they thought it was crazy. And when I decided to stop teaching and go to seminary, I had people call me up and offer me jobs because there's somehow it just doesn't fit to have somebody who fit into a particular category suddenly shed that category, and so they were anxious to get set back into place.
Yeah.
And I've since had that kind of thing happen to people who have come and worked as a contextual ed student at my parish now that I'm a pastor. And the same kind of thing that this student, the seminary student, who still belonged to a local home church, was not allowed to make transitions in that church. She had to do exactly what she'd always done. Otherwise, you know, there were no other possibilities. And she had to come to my church in order to be able to do something new. And I wonder what it is about the church that is so hangs-on to people's identity with particular tasks that they can't let go. Maybe we ought to have sort of tasks by a lot. Shake it out and say, well, this year you're going to do...
And then that reminds me of Bill. You were saying how people have come up to you, pastors who are somewhat envious of all these different things that you can do, that there are risk takers. And what does that say about the rest of us who are the status quo-ers? You know, and we don't want that. So there's got to be something wrong with you to do these strange things, because there's, of course, nothing wrong with me, you know, because all of society is built up the way that I perceive society. And then, you know, you want to be a Christian? I mean, what's your job? I mean, how dare you say that? Don't any of you feel that way? I don't, but...
Is there a comment up here?
I think I started to answer your question, actually. When you want to know why people in the church want to hold on to everything, because I think that's what I tried to make the church into a year or so ago, that it was the only stable force I could find on a college campus. And so therefore it was my stability. And in order, according to my perception, in order for it to remain stable, it had to stay the same. And that meant everything within it had to stay the same. And I think it made it possible that many people see the church in the way that I did or do or something like that you know, in this stable, simple foundation of the life, and the foundation steps, you know, and then you step together. You want the foundation to stay there.
Yeah. I'm reminded of two things that I hold in tension. One is a song that I've got on some record that I love to listen to, and the words of this medieval song are something about "and guard me with security." And then over against that, somebody who's a Luther scholar will tell me, doesn't Luther say something about never with security, always with confidence, that you don't have security? So those two things, I think we do seek security of one kind or another, but on the other hand, we better be people who risk and that means going out with faith.
I don't know about Luther, the bond of the system. The opposite of peace is security.
Security, oh, that's okay.
Well, it's somewhat the same. You know, we seek security, therefore we're not seeking peace.
Yeah, maybe Bonhoeffer got it from Luther.
Yeah.
The thing that's scary for me about being in transition is seeing like I'm out of control. That in terms of the things that I carefully planned to bring up, like happiness or security or whatever, I feel those things away. Truth is, during that time, it feels like, in some ways for me right now, it is true that I'm out of control, it's not a lot of you right now, I'm waiting for things to go out. And that's very scary for me, because I've learned that my security is being controlled, and I have to be careful. Another way I think about that is that it's also scary because I've given up the things that win me approval and win me recognition in the world. And to give those things up, I'm only left with myself. And so then the question is, well, what do I really think about myself? And do I really have enough confidence? Do I really love myself enough and feel myself lovable that that's enough? I'm stuck by what you said earlier, really caring about. Really, what he wants to do is to be a Christian. He's not to have a job, he's a Christian. And I'm struggling with it. Is it enough for me simply to be? And if not, how do I do it? And the real issue of faith.
Obviously, transition here is a lot of topics. Multiple types of transition, and I'd like to address the location of the transition. People who are considering transitions, why do we consider transition? What precipitates the transition? And one of my pet peeves in society that you were alluding to, and that you were alluding to, the ostracization that occurs when you do something that people don't expect you to do. And I wonder how many transitions occur, location transitions, because of burnout. The same thing over and over and over again, and you eventually run out of energy. And one of the things Ray said that intrigued me immensely was the concept of a sabbatical. And how many transitions could be avoided, if that were a perfect word, by a sabbatical. One of the teaching professionals has a sabbatical. My brother is an academic physician. Physicists, and they have sabbaticals, but professions such as pastors and physicians and lawyers and accountants and on and on, they don't allow that. I mean, it's not part of the form or the mold or the box or whatever. And I would hope that society would loosen up to the point where, you know, as a pastor, you could say, I'm going to take a year off. Holding to the carpenter and recharge your batteries, rejuvenate yourself, and then look at it from a different perspective. And maybe go back to what you're doing and not doing. But just to get the permission of your colleagues to do that is almost impossible. When you broach that subject, they're like, you know, and speaking of the transition, when someone is diagnosed with a cancer, there's a tremendous mentioned, but immediately people relate to that person in a different manner. And it's, in a way, it's the same thing when you announce that you're going to go do something else. People don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to relate to you. They don't relate to you as a human being. They relate to you more as what you're doing. But to summarize my comment, I've looked at the day when you can plan to have sabbaticals and whatever you do.
Jump in on that. I would think that just about everyone in this room are well qualified to be unemployed. because of your education, because of your imagination, because of the kind of things that Holden stands for that you do here, you would know how to spend your time. And our society's got it all topsy-turvy. So often the people who are unemployed are those who don't have the education, don't have the experience, that they literally don't know what to do. I really suspect Tara and others of you who are in transition and have this sort of guilt feeling that you're doing nothing. You're not doing nothing. You're doing more praying. You're doing more reflecting. You're doing more self-examination. And that's what needs to be a free human being and to be moving toward wholeness in the call that God has given to each of us. Don't apologize for being unemployed or in transition. Celebrate.
Be still and know. You know, the Time essay several years ago said that United States citizens take time to schedule everything, but reflect upon what they're doing. You know, the one thing that we don't do a very good job of doing. And sometimes transitions force us to do that, and that should be maybe a blessing.
Jerry.
Here and then whoever said Jerry.
I'm in a transition within my family. My parents aging and retiring, and all of a sudden a big change in living arrangements, and that's been difficult for me. I just wondered if anybody else has had that, changing from being the child to something else. I'm not sure what it is yet.
Okay, this is not on your subject. In an interview once with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, someone asked her how we can help people die easier. She said, to raise your children with unconditional love, instead of loving them for what they do, for getting a grade, playing a musical instrument, or running fast, anything. Just love them unconditionally. Don't make them achievers. And then when you come to a point in your life when you're going to die, and you stop producing, you stop doing, you still know you are loved. Because it's that love we learn as children that we carry through our lives. And this is what we're talking about now. Is that when we don't do, we don't think we are important. And because in many ways we can raise them.
Darius, yes. Wendell Berry, I heard him talk once, and he said that the national ambition is unemployment in the United States. That we long for weekends, we long for vacations, we long for retirement. The national motto or the national public prayer is, thank God it's Friday. And his thing is, why is that? Why is work this drudgery? And I think it's back to why some people have chosen to move out into some other sort of style, which is more life-filling. I always say, if I was independently wealthy, what would I do? And if I would do a lot of what I'm doing now, I think I can say, I'm pretty satisfied with what I'm doing. And when I can't say that, I start getting nervous. Up here and then over here.
Well, I was going to tell a story about, I have a woman in my foundation who's about 86, and this is a big problem with older retired folks is this. You know, what do they fill their life with? A lot of them live in the past when they were doing something. And it's always so pleasant to find so many of them, especially at this Holden, I think there's a number of them that are really quite vibrant and occupied and excited. Anyway, Boris Gil Scarvel was talking to me about growing old, the great transition of the elderly to more and more things you can't do. And she has all kinds of problems. Hip replacements and arthritis and we name it, because she was telling me all about growing old. And I said, she was teaching me about that, and she said to me, when she wakes up in the morning, she wakes up and she says, well, here you are again. And then she says, and what am I going to do today? And I think that's really, as long as you can keep saying that, what, here you are again, and what are you going to do today? That means she's really still alive. It means she's still alive.
Yeah. Jess Lehrer says something, and I ain't much baby, but I'm all I got. He says, heck, sometimes living a day at a time is too rough. I just got to go 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's
gone
to what
you
said.
I've
been relating to everything Mother Nature said, because I've been going to being kind of I'm 19, and I'm not a child anymore, but my mother was not around. Probably all I need to say, I'm having a really difficult time adjusting to new relationships with my mother and with one of my sisters, because I'm no longer a child, and I'm an adult now, and I'm not grown up. Somebody, child called me a grown-up the other day, and I just cringed. Well, I'm not a grown-up, but I'm not a child either.
Okay, raise your hand if you're a grown-up.
Also cover Psychology Today. I forgot who said it, but he was like 50 years old. What am I going to do when I grow up? Was that plus 50? Yeah, here and then over here, we'll see how much time we've got.
Well, I was just going to say, listening to all the comments you folks are making, it strikes me that I don't think this is going to be theologically sound. So, but
turn the tape off.
I really feel like for you and especially, but for every one of us, people we run into and institutions and things that are said to us are not going to be very generous. And if we define ourselves by either what the church says to us, that you must wait for a call, or you must go to a call even if you don't want to go, that's really a pilot. You know, I think that we need to start enjoying ourselves and loving ourselves, because and then we will do well what we want to do, and we will do a good job. As you said, we're creative enough and mature enough, maybe not grown up enough, but to do what we feel we want to do, if we feel, you know, freedom to do it. And if we define ourselves by what have you done with yourself in the 19 years, or are you taking a call that makes you suffer enough? Yeah. We all buy it, though, and I bought it, and it just doesn't make sense if you really think about it. And I don't think many other people do. I mean, I don't think you'll find many people sitting around doing this, which is good, it's healthy, but I think we need to start looking out for ourselves a little bit more. That's why I say it's theological.
I just
want
to kind of respond to what Jess said. The comments about community and how you support somebody in transition. Even the thinking that it's such a long time, only you can make the decision, only you can plan the next step. That, and it's such an intense time for yourself, I find myself withdrawing from people, and then feeling like I have to do everything myself. And so when you're withdrawing from people that potentially can support you, and people aren't reaching. It's maybe a perception people aren't reaching out for some assistance or say, I understand, or I need from the church or from friends. And my family's really hanging in there, and I appreciate it so much. But I think it's hard to support people because they withdraw once they fall.
On the other side of that, how do you explain the non-transitionee, what's going on? My wife doesn't want to be in limbo any longer.
Oh.
Get on with it. And
yeah.
In limbo.
Yeah. That's another
side of that.
That's another whole topic. Yeah. And it is 10 o'clock.
Transition has no time.
Transition has no time. Yeah. We need a formal break for those who wish to want to go, but if some people want to talk more about that topic or something else, I might just want to say, my dad died of a heart attack at age 57, almost at age 59. He hated the job he did. He tested it. He just had these wonderful dreams of retirement. He just couldn't wait to retire. All the things that I keep discovering about all these dreams he had. It's so sad. It's so sad. you know, sometimes you can postpone those transitions and you never do it. And I think that it takes some gutsy people to move out into the unknown. John Paul starts playing the lecture for you. The Holden Prayer. Does somebody know that by heart, the Compline Prayer? God, let us go out with good courage, not knowing where we go, but only that your hand is leading us and your love is supporting us.